listening to A Senior Moment on Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with my regular co-hosts, Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning, Joanne.
And Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Hi, Doug.
Good morning.
And we have some special guests in the studio this month. We have Leslie Blazewicz from Columbia Memorial Hospital in Astoria. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Joanne.
And Cecilia Sanders is from Harbor Home Health and Hospice. Hi.
Good morning.
Thank you all for being here. We're going to be talking about a kind of a serious topic today. We're going to be talking about hospice care and what kind of a service this is, why a person might want to take advantage of it, and what kind of opportunities there are in our local area for people to obtain hospice care. Cecilia, why don't I start with you? You are a social worker, and you work in hospice and have done so for some time. So why don't we start out with what is hospice?
Well, hospice is a Medicare benefit provided to people who are on Medicare or have been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and their doctor has talked to them that there's no longer any treatment available and that this will be a terminal illness, and their criteria is that they are expected to die within 6 months. That doesn't always work that way, but that's the Medicare criteria. You can also receive a hospice benefit through Medicaid if you're on Medicaid. Many private health insurances will cover hospice benefit also, so it isn't just a benefit for people 65 and older. You can access the benefit in other ways.
Okay, Leslie, you are the chief clinical and quality officer for the hospital, and you deal with hospice issues quite a bit as well. Why would somebody want to be in a hospice program instead of just kind of staying at home and handling it themselves or with family members? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you said hospice can be a serious issue. I think one of the things a hospice program does is help support the patient and the family through a coordinated effort with their physician, family members that are, you know, designated caregivers, and also opens up resources so that patients don't have to feel alone during this time frame. Their families have opportunities to discuss issues about, you know, what are our last plans? What do we want to do? We've had patients take trips to see people even while they're on the hospice program. We can provide for medication, for equipment, for even relief visits or respite visits for the family members. So to me, the biggest thing that I see a hospice program can offer is that connectedness, that extra support, and then someone to advocate for you about the decisions that you're making and coordinate that with your doc, your family members, and make that happen.
So Cecilia, let me ask you this question. You mentioned Medicare. So generally people in hospice care, it's paid for in some way for them?
Yes, Medicare will cover all costs for hospice services, and usually the services are provided in home, in the person's home. It can be done in a facility, but the funding, you have to have separate funding for that. Like if a person's on Medicaid, they could go into an adult family home or an assisted living and still receive hospice benefit. Medicare will pay for the team services, which is a nurse, bath aide, social worker, hospice volunteer, hospice chaplain. There's speech and occupational therapy if a person needs that. Medicare pays a contracted agency a certain amount each day for that service, regardless of how many parts of that service we provide to the patient and the family. Medicare also pays for any durable medical equipment, such as a hospital bed, commode, anything that's needed in order to keep the patient comfortable, which, again, comfort is the main focus of hospice. It pays for any medications to maintain comfort related to the diagnosis. Pain medications, lots of times anxiety medication, bowel program types of meds, and any other medication or service that needs that the person might need in order to remain comfortable. That also can include like oxygen, some medical supplies, bandages, things like that. Mm-hmm. And all of that is covered for the entire time the person is on hospice, regardless of how long that is. I mean, it could be 6 days or a year. I think we've had some people a little longer than a year. What it does not pay for is caregiver support service. So to have someone come in and assist the family to take care of the person, that is not part of the Medicare hospice benefit.
Leslie, let me ask you this question. When people think of hospice, they sort of think maybe that you go to a hospice place and then you're in it. But that isn't always the case, is it? Sometimes people have this in their homes or both?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the real beauties of the hospice program is that you can stay in your home. And if that's the goal of a patient and their family, that is one of the main focuses, is how do we keep, you know, this time in someone's life supported in their home environment, and that everyone knows what they need to do or have the resources to participate in that to the extent that the patient agrees and or can agree. And there are other settings for hospice care, which Cecilia mentioned, like the nursing homes or adult mm-hmm. foster homes. And also patients who are not on the Medicare or Medicaid program can have hospice services. They are private at that point in time, and depending on insurance or non-insurance, it really comes down to what's covered and or what the cost is.
So do health insurance policies generally cover that sort of thing?
Yes, they do. If it's written in the contract with their health insurance, like if you had, you know, if you worked for someone and the company provided, you know, your health insurance, they have contracts of what they cover, what they don't cover. And so if the insurance company provides the hospice benefit, then you're eligible for that regardless of how old you are. As long as you meet the criteria that Medicare has stipulated for that, for the hospice benefit, yes.
Well, so if someone, say, is listening to the show and they have a situation in their family with a family member who is terminally ill and they wanted to find a hospice program, how do you go about finding one? Maybe I can ask Cecilia, ask you that. I mean, Leslie, ask you that first.
Well, we're listed in the phone book under Lower Columbia Hospice, Columbia Memorial Hospice. And you can call the office Monday through Friday, business hours. There's an emergency number as well, because hospice is a service that's 24/7. Mm-hmm. Also, if you talk to your provider, physician, nurse practitioner, whoever you might see, or have your family members start to have that conversation even before you're going to your doctor, it's a really important discussion to have. The earlier that a patient and their family can have that, the earlier that a physician or a nurse practitioner, physician assistant can share in that dialogue, the better prepared everyone can be, and the earlier access to the hospice agencies, the more we can really do for you. So really, it's simply picking up the phone or reaching out to your provider or having that conversation with your family members.
Well, that seems like one of the most difficult conversations that somebody could possibly have in their life. So how do you go about, Cecilia, let me ask you this question. We talked a little bit about this before the show, about what if you have a family that's in denial? But, you know, I've heard from people that I know who have experienced hospice because relating to a family member, that it was a tremendously comforting thing that really helped everyone involved. But what about people who are too afraid to admit that they're dying or that their family member's dying? How do you help people in that situation?
Well, I'm usually the first person that goes in once our agency gets a referral. So I encounter that that death just isn't real to people in the beginning. It's, you know, we kind of live our lives as if we're going to live forever, and that's a really hard reality to accept. So the conversations, I think people kind of go through the motions in the beginning. And, you know, the denial part, after a short period of time, most people cannot deny it because it's so obvious. The person begins to decline. You know, there's changes. And so I think acceptance comes pretty quickly once the terminal illness has been diagnosed and those kind of talks. But in the beginning, when I first meet with people, I think the most helpful thing for them is that they can ask me lots of questions, and I can talk about the benefit, the hospice benefit, and then it usually goes into, well, what are some of the things we're going to see? You know, what's going to happen to my mom or my brother? And talk about kind of that process that most people go through as their life comes to an end. And I think that usually by the time I've met with them and the nurse then comes out and opens hospice if they've accepted it, that between the 2 to 3 hours of discussion through our agency, that most people, I think they really do start to accept it. So that's, yeah.
Okay. Well, a lot of times when you think of hospice, you think of cancer. But there are lots of other illnesses that are in a sense terminal, mm-hmm. that could put a person in the situation of wanting or needing these benefits. Leslie, can you talk a little bit about who's in hospice? What illnesses bring people to that service?
Yeah, hospice is not just cancer. And I think that in the broader community, we often make that link. But in the 6 years that I've been here working with Columbia Memorial Hospital, what I've seen in our population is that it's quite a mix. We have several of the neuromuscular diseases and have also supported patients with end-stage respiratory diseases, end-stage cardiac diseases. Really, it could be a myriad of things. And it's also all ages. So we're not just dealing with people that have lived a life and have sort of, made their awards or had their merits and are saying it's my time. We sometimes have presented with us parents, young children. And so it really is a spectrum. And we can offer any patient at any age with really any terminal diagnosis the support that they would need.
Well, here's a question. Cecilia, let me ask you this. What if somebody goes into hospice and starts to get better? What do you do with them?
Well, two things can happen, and we've actually had those experiences in the time I've worked for this agency. Your illness can become managed, and you can stabilize, and you can revoke hospice and go on about your life, still with an illness, but not imminently dying. Or you can be discharged from hospice because you no longer meet the criteria. So hospice is not a one-time thing. You can be referred for hospice, accept it, go on the service, and then revoke it or discharge from it. And you could come back on, like if hypothetically, if you had cancer and your doctor told you there's nothing else they can do, and you went on hospice for 4 months, and then you read about some other treatment you wanted to try, you could revoke hospice, go do the treatment. If it wasn't effective, you could come back on hospice. So it's you can come and go. It doesn't usually happen that way, but it's possible.
So I just wanted to point out that, Cecilia, your facility is in Washington. And
yes.
Leslie, we're talking about Oregon here, and we always try on the show to kind of get both sides of the river. And sometimes there are slight differences in the services that are offered between states. But, Leslie, is there any difference between Oregon and Washington in this sort of thing?
It's really a federal program.
Yeah.
So the services are really similar wherever you go. And our lower Columbia Hospice serves Clatsop County, so it's not just an Astoria agency, but it really does serve the whole county and is the only hospice in Clatsop County.
Well, I just want to take a moment to remind everybody that you're listening to A Senior Moment on Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with my co-hosts, Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services, Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. We have Leslie Blazewicz from Columbia Memorial Hospital and Cecilia Sanders from Harbor Home Health and Hospice. And we're talking about hospice services, which is really end-of-life care. And, you know, what sort of services are available locally, who pays for it, why somebody might want this service. And so for listeners, it's an opportunity to learn more about something that might be a very valuable service at some point in all of our lives. So I wanted to ask a little bit about, for people who are working in this field, we talk a lot on this show about people who are really working very hard to do difficult things in this whole social service realm. You're dealing with people who have needs, and some of those needs are pretty heartbreaking, and they really push our boundaries. I mean, this thing, you know, death is one of the biggest things that people don't like to talk about. And so I wanted to ask both of you, Cecilia and Leslie, you know, how do you... You know, as we talked about before the show, the emotional quality of the care that someone gives in this situation is so important, maybe even more than the medication, is the feeling that you give people when you're able to give this kind of service. So, Cecilia, how do you stay committed and positive in a realm where the people you know, the people you work with, die?
Right, because I do primarily work with hospice, and so it's like every client I have is... passes away. Well, most everyone, because we have had a few people that have discharged. But what we do when we go in, the nurses, our team, when I say we, it's a team concept. You know, we go in and we let people know that we're providing the service, that they're not alone through this, that there's someone there who's going to answer their questions, help with the person who's dying, the person's discomfort levels. You know, we address all that and we listen to people's emotional responses to what's happening, and you walk out the door and sometimes it's just a real heavy feeling. And what I have found in our agency is that we do have every other week we have a hospice meeting, and we talk about our clients and we talk about what's happening and different difficulties that people are having. But in addition to that, I mean, every time I go into the office, there's usually one or two other people there, and we talk about, you know, how difficult some things are, or our feelings about how a family is struggling with this whole process. And so I think there's a lot of, we unburden ourselves in healthy ways. I know the nurses will, as they have available, they'll take 2 weeks and, you know, take vacation for 2 weeks or take a weekend off because they're on call all the time. Because you can, if you're on hospice, you can call the service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So someone from our agency is always on call. So they take time off, they go up to the casino and have fun, and they do fun things and they get support. And I think that's how we manage to stay, to deal with that emotional heaviness that occurs in this kind of work.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leslie, mm-hmm. How at CMH, how do you all deal with this whole realm of, it's an unusual form of healthcare.
Yeah. Well, Cecilia, as she said, is a social worker and really provides direct care. So in my role, I'm oversighting more of the administrative rules and policies and making sure our staff has the resources they need to do their jobs. And I have to say I have the utmost respect for this team of care providers that we have, the nurses, the therapists, the home health aides, the social workers, the pastor. And they really put their hearts and professions and everything they have into making sure people don't die alone. Their families have that person to go to. So in regards to that, in our weekly meetings, one of the requests that we've had and one of the things that I've seen being successful is to make sure we take the time that if any of the care providers want to talk about, gee, my patient on Saturday or this instance, to throw it out there so they could really tap into their peers. There's amazing bonding in the group around, yeah, that happened to me, and I could share what worked or didn't work, or just taking the time to be quiet about it. But really acknowledging that those feelings are real and letting them go is also important.
Well, is there a burnout rate in this kind of work? I know that sometimes in all the healthcare professions, people just have to flee at some point and go do something else. So is there a burnout rate in this kind of care, Leslie, that you know of?
I would say that there's a couple things. When we look at our local experience, we have a lot of nurses that are more towards the end of their career, and newer nurses who are entering the field, whether it doesn't really matter their age, may or may not feel that calling to providing the hospice services immediately. Some do. Yes, there are people, and we actually see it in our volunteer group as well, that need to say, I need a break from this. So they may go back and do med-surg nursing, or they may take some time off and then come back to the program. And for some people, it's time to retire, or they don't need to work as much, so maybe they just do intermittent or relief work. But yeah, it is a job that is continuing challenging to stay committed and to be there for the patients.
Well, Cecilia, how long have you been doing this kind of work?
Well, I've worked for this agency for 3.5 years, and I've dealt with grief and loss issues in previous employment I've had, but this has been my first just strictly hospice, home health. I do some home health, but it's mostly hospice. Well, it's all hospice. I think what I have noticed is just that, it feels like, and I think our team, I can speak to other people on our team, that we're just so constantly in touch with people's deep emotions, because death and dying is such an emotional position and experience. And so we're, I think that it takes a lot of compassion and a lot of work on boundaries, you know, kind of separating ourselves sometimes.
How has being involved in this kind of work changed your view about death?
Oh,
because most people don't ever have to face this down unless it's
right,
their own.
Right.
So, but you do all the time. So.
I do, and I've dealt, like I said, in the past with, you know, issues around death and clients who have died and you know, murders and things like that in some of my past work. And this really brings death just right up close and personal. And I had always thought about, you know, what I would do if my life were to end. But I find now that it was really naive of me because I'm facing it just so close now with people that it has made me think a lot about what I want the end of my life to be and how I want it to be and, you know, the decisions I would make. So whenever, with each family that I visit and with each new person I meet on our service, I learn a little more about what it's going to be for me. And so I learn a lot from people. I've learned so much from how they've managed their deaths and their families. So I think it's been a good experience for me because it's part of everyone's life. And I now have the opportunity to really deal with it realistically.
Well, Leslie, in from your perspective in the nursing profession, I mean, people tend to go into nursing, from what I know of friends of mine who are nurses, because they want to save lives. And so now you're in this position with this program where you're helping people, kind of ushering them out. So how has that affected your views about life and death to be in charge of a program like that and watching people go through this process of kind of helping people kind of out the door of life, really?
You know, I can say in my career, which is now almost 30 years as a nurse, that not only has the sort of medicine around caring for death and end of life, palliative care, changed, but so has philosophy. So I was a labor and delivery nurse in the early years of, you know, single room maternity care and, you know, birth. And now I'm responsible for all aspects of nursing care and clinical services at the hospital. And as it relates to death, where I think I can advocate the most as a nurse and as an administrator for patients is around choice. So we need to make sure that as we ask ourselves about end-of-life care, palliative care, hospice care, and the dying process, are we putting the patient and their family in a position where they're making the choice with the most information?
Okay. And so that really does track with everything that we've just been talking about during the whole show, which is really making that information available to people and helping them come to terms with it about something that is one of the most difficult things you could ask anybody to come to terms with. Well, we are sort of at the point in the show where we give contact information. And so why don't I start, Cecilia, if someone wanted to get a hold of you and your organization, is there phone number, website, email, anything like that that you would want to share with us?
Yes, there's. I always go to our phone number. It's 1-800-772-1319, and that is a phone number that's answered 24 hours a day. So, and it, you can access healthcare in Grace Harbor County and Pacific County, which our agency provides hospice services for both counties. Medicare has a website that you can go on, Medicare, and you can you can find hospice organizations anywhere through that Medicare website. So I'll look on the Medicare website in order to find hospice services in, you know, in an area that I'm not familiar with.
Okay. Yeah. Leslie, how about you? Contact info.
Our agency, Lower Columbia Hospice, is best contacted by phone, 503-338-6230. We also have a website for columbiamemorial.org.
Okay. And now, Michelle and Doug have been very quiet during this interview, but I'm gonna make you guys talk now. You guys, both of you, represent tremendous clearinghouses of information where people can go, tremendous resources where if you don't remember anything else about this show but you have a question, you can call either of these two folks, and they will refer you to some of the people who are guests on our show. So I always like to include the contact information. So, Michelle, you're Northwest Senior and Disability Services. How can people get a hold of your office?
Okay, yeah, I appreciate our guests today talking about hospice. In our office, actually, anything senior or adult disabilities goes through one phone number. It's our information assistance number. It's 1-800-584-9712. Or nwsds.org will get you there, too.
Okay, and Doug?
Well, our North County office in Raymond is 942-2177, or toll-free at 888-571-6557. And our office in South Pacific County is at 642-3634, or 888-571-6558. Our agency website is www.o3a.org. Now we're on Facebook, and I'm just discovering what that means. So,
well, you've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. We've been talking about hospice care this month with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services, Leslie Blazewicz from Columbia Memorial Hospital, and Cecilia Sanders from Harbor Home Health and Hospice. And we've been talking about end-of-life care. And so if you need any more information, call some of those numbers, and we'll see you next time on A Senior Moment. Thanks for listening.